This is Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter. I'm your host, Fiona Mattesini, and in this episode, we're talking about hair. Now, we cover a lot in this episode, and if you've covered hair loss, which is Dr. Sophie's primary focus, I think and I hope you'll find it really useful. But this is an episode that has some amazing, more generic tips and advice from Dr. Sophie too, on things like hair thinning and general hair health. So we talk about some of the causes of hair loss, including a few things to look out for.
When you have that stressor on top of an underlying chronic condition, be it something like anemia or hypothyroidism, that stress can affect your hair more.
We had a couple of unexpectedly interesting diversions. Here's a quick clip.
It definitely is a phenomenon I've observed.
Of course, we talk about treatments from proven supplements to various lotions.
It's not going to be that you start using it and a week later you've got results. It can take up to 6 months to see results, and even often 3 months before you really notice any progress.
And to more sophisticated technology.
It's a full kind of explanation of your genetic characteristics and how they relate to your hair loss.
And as I said, we also talk more generally about hair health and some of the products that we love.
The other range that I discovered a few years ago now that I am obsessed with is something called...
Thank you so much for listening. It's the hair episode on Age Well with Dr. Sophie Schotter. Sophie, hair loss seems to be far more common in men than women. And of course, that instantly brings potentially a lot of shame and embarrassment and makes it a bit of a taboo. Here in the UK, I think the poster girl for alopecia has always been Gail Porter.
Yeah.
Very sort of famous presenter and model in the 90s. In America, it might be someone like Jada Pinkett Smith. And I think all of us remember that uncomfortable altercation at the Oscars where her alopecia, I think, was mentioned there. What causes alopecia, and does stress play a role?
Alopecia is just a term for hair loss, and there are many different types of alopecia. And almost all men and around 80% of women will have experienced hair thinning by the age of 60. And for some people, that thinning goes on to become real hair loss. Mm-hmm. If you don't have it now, bear in mind that at some point, this is quite likely to affect you. So park this knowledge, or I guess this podcast, somewhere useful, and don't be afraid to share it, because knowledge is power. And as you said, it can be something that can bring a lot of shame and embarrassment. Yeah. There are lots of causes, and I think maybe it makes sense to go through each one. Mm-hmm. The leading cause for both men and women is androgenetic alopecia, which is sex hormone related alopecia. Mm-hmm. Stress is also a big factor. Something called telogen effluvium is a post-stress form of hair loss. And also, it's a lesser known symptom of perimenopause. I think it's important to say that there's no magic bullet when it comes to treating this, but there are several things that can really help. And the hair loss market is growing constantly, and so technology is advancing with it all the time. Mm-hmm. But I guess to go into things in a little bit more detail, let's start with genetics. And a lot of people have a genetic predisposition towards hair loss. So we don't really know the method of inheritance in women as clearly as we do in men, but it definitely does run in families. Mm-hmm. Men tend to lose their frontal hairline and also the back of the head, the occiput, mm-hmm. where women tend not to, although there is a specific type of hair loss in women called frontal fibrosing alopecia, which does only affect women and is along the front of the hairline. But when we're talking about androgenetic alopecia, in men, it tends to form this typical hairline pattern, whereas in women it tends to affect the whole scalp. It's a thinning all over and a widening of the parting. Mm-hmm. I think it's also important to talk about something called dihydrotestosterone, or DHT. And this is a sex hormone that most adults produce. And one of its functions is stimulating the growth of body and pubic hair, but it also plays a role in scalp hair loss. Mm-hmm. So when DHT levels are too high, it can overstimulate the hair follicles. And this results in something called miniaturization of the follicle. So the hair becomes smaller, finer, and lighter, and eventually can result in this hair loss, so which we call pattern hair loss, male mm-hmm. or female pattern hair loss. So Many treatments for hair loss aim to block or inhibit the effect of this DHT on those hair follicles to preserve hair. That's the most common cause dealt with.
Genetics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Diet and medications can be a big one as well. The hair cells are amongst the most rapidly dividing cells of the human body. And as such, our nutrition is really key. And it's also certain types of medication. So if you've recently had a medication change, even a few months ago, and then you start to notice hair loss, speak to your GP about it, because it could be that it is related to certain types of medication. Mm-hmm. And this is often something you notice weeks or months down the line. You might not even at first put two and two together and realize the trigger. So it's important to backtrack by a little bit of time.
Yeah. Okay.
Another one I see really commonly is overstyling or overprocessing. So anything that pulls at the roots is going to weaken them over time. And eventually that hair will just fall out and not grow back. Mm. And particularly when it comes to very tight hairstyles like braiding, This can cause something called traction alopecia. So it's really something to bear in mind if you do like to wear braid hairstyles. Mm-hmm. And anything like really tight ponytails or chemical hair treatments or straighteners, especially when we combine it with colouring your hair or overheating as well, like hair straighteners, I think most of us are these days, right?
Yeah.
So anything you do to the surface of that hair follicle can cause the hair to break. I think it's again about being mindful for those of us who are lucky enough to not have significant hair loss yet. Brush your hair gently, think about the chemical or heat insults you subject your hair to. But if you are struggling with hair thinning or hair loss, then definitely bear these things in mind. And There's even a hairbrush called Manta that molds to the shape of your hand and your scalp. And it was invented by a hairdresser whose wife was growing her hair back after an illness. And that sort of thing can really help you be more gentle.
I think I saw them in Dragon's Den, actually.
Yeah, I think they were, yeah. So I would really think about your scalp as an extension of your skin. So try and avoid anything that's too harsh. Some silicones can be a problem. Others are water soluble and therefore can be washed off when you shampoo. Mm-hmm. But unless you really know what you're looking for on a product inky list again, and we already talk a lot about skincare inky lists, here are hair inky lists that you need to think about. And too much of those non-soluble silicones can block the hair follicles.
Yeah.
I think it's important to be thinking about that. And there are also lots of things you can do for thinning hair using hair fibers or hair mousse that can create the illusion of thicker hair. But I'd always talk to a professional hairdresser for tips on that.
Yeah. And also, have you noticed that people are raving about Dyson's new range of hair dryers and straighteners? I think apparently because they use less heat. I'm not really on top of this, to be honest with you, but I do know that a lot of beauty journalists have been talking a lot about Dyson and what they're doing in the hair dryer and hair care space.
Absolutely. And I have to admit, I am a fan. I have probably most of their gadgets. I have the Coral, which is their straighteners.
Yeah.
I have their Air Wrap, which is a combined dryer and curler. I have their dryer. And they also have, a bit like the Air Wrap, but now this thing called Air Straight, which dries and straightens your hair at the same time, which I haven't tried yet, but I do want to. But actually, a good friend and beauty editor that I know very well, Alexandra Friend, she's at Red. She also raves about Hirschesons heat styling products. And I know she's a big fan of them. And she's someone I trust very much. So that's just another brand to look at.
Yeah. I saw you mentioned in a piece that she did as well in Red magazine. So enjoyed reading that. Right. Back to the causes of hair loss. So we've had nutrition possibly and diet and medications, overprocessing and styling basically is where we've got to. Is any anything else?
Hormones.
Of course.
Yeah, it's your hormones. So whether that's childbirth, menopause, and even polycystic ovarian syndrome.
Okay.
So estrogen is very positive for hair growth, and it can prolong the growth phase of your hair. So this is why towards the end of pregnancy, when estrogen levels are really high, you often notice that women have this thick, lustrous, beautiful, glowing hair. Mm. But then towards the very end of the third trimester, as the estrogen starts to drop and the cortisol stress hormones start to rise, this combination often leads to hair shedding in the months after pregnancy. So this withdrawal of these high hormone levels, that's a big one, postpartum hair shedding. Mm-hmm. A lot of women also experience hair loss as they're going through perimenopause. And this is also around the time when that genetic predisposition towards hair loss can really start to show itself. Mm-hmm. And women in their 40s and their 50s are often also more prone to nutritional deficiencies or other hormonal problems such as thyroid imbalances. And one that I think is often neglected is polycystic ovarian syndrome. Mm-hmm. And this can cause androgenetic alopecia. So this is, again, about the sex hormones and these high androgen levels driving hair loss. And it's often more apparent after menopause because of that loss of balancing estrogen. And there are things that can be done. There are various scalp treatments and scalp drops. I know that Philip Kingsley has some scalp drops which contain a vasodilator and a kind of a blend of micronutrients that can help to protect the hair follicles from the effects of male hormones. So that could be one to look out for. I guess my next one, I sometimes sound like a broken record, stress. Oh, sorry.
Yeah, it's there though, isn't it? It is a cause. I was reading about this.
Oh, it's massive. And our hair follicles are so sensitive to both emotional and physical stress. This could be something physical, like having had a major operation, or psychological, like a bereavement or a relationship breakup.
Yeah.
And our lives are more overloaded than they ever have been. And so our cortisol stress hormone levels are often far more raised. And you might find that stress-related hair loss shows up again months after the trigger. Mm-hmm. So you might not put two and two together. And it can even be severe infection, all of these things. And you might not put those pieces together straight away. But if it's just a temporary period of stress, hair growth usually just resumes itself within a couple of months without you needing to intervene. Mm-hmm. And it's when you have that stressor on top of an underlying chronic condition, be it something like anemia or hypothyroidism, that stress can affect your hair more. Mm-hmm. So I know I sometimes sound like a broken record about the role of stress, but I think all of this, you can really also appreciate why hair loss is often quite complicated. We'll delve into lots of different aspects of someone's life when we're talking about hair loss, because it's not always straightforward.
Yeah, and I don't think you're a scratch record at all. I think a lot of the stuff that you say is just knowledge that we have to keep pushing out there.
Yeah.
And it sounds really boring, because it's like, can it just be stress, or can it just be lack of sleep? Or yes, it can.
I guess the final thing to say is there are some very rare causes. So there's something called trichotillomania, which is a type of OCD, actually, which is where people have this kind of compulsion to pull out their hair, usually from one bit of the head, but it can also be eyelashes, eyebrows, or pubic hair. Mm-hmm. And then there's also hair loss caused by autoimmune diseases. So this could be lupus, it could be Hashimoto's thyroiditis, or something called Graves' disease. So this can be autoimmune, either low or high thyroid. Mm-hmm. And I guess it's really important for me to remind everyone that I am here giving information on a podcast. I'm not diagnosing you. Mm-hmm. So if you are in any doubt about what's going on with you, it's so important to see a doctor and talk about your own personal health and hair history so that you get the appropriate advice and treatment for you as an individual.
Yeah, so well said. And we are going to go into detail on various treatments, but just to say, and you mentioned this at the top of the interview, things are advancing, aren't they? So we do want people to feel positive about any hair loss they may be going through.
For sure, we have so many more options than we used to. And there are some amazing scientists in this space and researchers. There's a woman called Angela Cristiano. She's an American academic. Like so many people who become passionate about something, she has personal experience. She was mm-hmm. diagnosed with alopecia areata, and that's an autoimmune disease where the body sees the hair follicles as foreign and it launches this immune attack on the follicles, causing hair loss. And it's often in specific, almost circular patches. But unlike some other forms of hair loss, the follicle isn't permanently damaged, so it does have an opportunity to recover. And Angela was already researching the genetics of skin and hair diseases that are inherited, and she quickly pivoted her focus to focus on alopecia areata. Mm. And a couple of years ago in America, the FDA approved a drug that her research focused on, something called a JAK inhibitor. It blocks an enzyme or a group of enzymes called JAK kinases. This drug has been approved in the past for treating rheumatoid arthritis and recently also for hospitalized COVID patients because it dampens those inflammatory responses in the body and is now also being used in hair loss. So I think there's a lot of advancement.
Yeah, and another thing that I've been picking up on is that the immune system is quite an interesting part of lots of things, but including hair loss.
Absolutely. But this kind of hair loss, it basically means that the body's immune surveillance, it's not functioning properly. And your body kind of starts to see this hair follicle as something that's dangerous to you. And so it sends a signal out, activating various immune cells to actually kill the hair follicle off. And these are the same signals that are used by your body when there's an infection or a cancerous cell or a cell that's dying. And then your body signals your immune system to destroy the target. But when that happens against normal healthy tissue, that's something called autoimmunity. So where your body is mistakenly attacking your own tissues.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And also, just quickly, what about when there are random white patches of hair on the head?
Yeah, we do hear stories of sudden hair whitening. And it's often overnight thing in response to a trauma or a shock. And going back to the immune system, we don't yet know the particular molecule in the hair follicle that's responsible for setting off the immune response in alopecia areata. But one candidate was thought to be melanin, which is the thing that gives our skin pigment, but it also gives our hair pigment. Mm-hmm. Because when alopecia areata starts, it usually preferentially attacks the more darkly pigmented follicles and it seems to spare the white follicles. So it has actually been suggested that this sudden whitening is an acute onset of alopecia areata and that the hair follicles that were pigmented were targeted by the immune system and fell out, and that the follicles that were spared and therefore left behind were the white ones. But there's a lot of interesting research happening in this area, and there have been lots of reports linking it to dust mites, various types of viruses like cytomegalovirus or Epstein-Barr virus, and of course, again, microbiome.
So, back to gut health.
Exactly. And there's also, you know, studies that show that skin diseases like psoriasis or atopic dermatitis have an association with the skin microbiome. And Professor Angela's work does suggest that the gut microbiome is also linked to alopecia areata and also to stress.
Gosh. And I think we've touched on COVID, coronavirus. Can COVID cause hair loss?
So it's not officially listed as a symptom of coronavirus, but there have been many women come forward with claims of hair loss after having the virus. But my theory on this is much more that it can happen after any severe infection. It's this stress response where your body for a period of time has had to channel its resources into fighting coronavirus. And so when that happens, then you've gone through this period of stress-related hair shedding afterwards. It definitely is a phenomenon I've observed, but I believe it's more to do with this telogen effluvium, this stress-related hair loss.
Yeah. So I've been going through my own hair loss journey, having had my cancer diagnosis last year and gone through chemotherapy. I was dealing with it, I think, quite gracefully at first. And now I'm just moaning about it like hell because it's at this awful regrowth stage. I've noticed that my hair is growing back curlier after chemotherapy. Is that the case, not just with chemo, but is it the case that any hair regrowth people do have may well grow back differently?
Absolutely. Yeah. Women often report that the hair they have as it regrows after whatever cause of hair loss is different than the one they had before.
Yeah. Okay. Which may be a good thing.
And sometimes they then have to learn, with that comes learning how to style curly hair if they've always had straight hair. So it can be quite a challenge.
Yeah.
And some women view it as an exciting thing. And for other women, it's something that's a little bit more uncomfortable.
Yeah. No, I'm just moaning all the time. We're like, where's my hair? It's coming. So you've mentioned a few treatments already. Shall we go into a few more details about just all the different treatments that are available?
Sure. There's so many different lotions and potions for hair loss on the market, both pharmaceutical and I guess kind of within the more alternative space. And some are more effective than others. Some are very easy to use and only need it to be applied like once a day or every other day. And others are a bit more labor intensive. So I guess the first thing to say is all topical treatments will need to be used consistently if you want to see results. So that also takes patience. It's not going to be that you start using it and a week later you've got results. It can take up to 6 months to see results, and even often 3 months before you really notice any progress. And it's not just about products to treat the hair loss. It really does come down to looking at your lifestyle, optimize your nutrition, make sure you've got enough protein intake and enough micronutrient intake, keeping your stress levels under control, and also thinking about strengthening the condition of your hair. So there are lots of different types of hair treatment you can do, whether that's just moisturizing ones, or I'm quite a big fan of something called K18, which helps to restore and replenish the protein content of the skin. Mm-hmm. It always depends on the quality and also the concentrations of the active ingredients. So it's worth checking the label. There are several options that we've got in clinic where we've seen really life-changing results. But when we look at over-the-counter and maybe more wallet-friendly options, both minoxidil and finasteride have been licensed for androgenetic alopecia. And finasteride is usually given orally, but actually in clinic, we work with a compounding pharmacy where we can use topical finasteride and dutasteride, which can really help to minimize the side effects, which can be problematic even more so for men than for women. And minoxidil is something that you can find in a product called Regain. I think in the States it's Rogaine. And this is probably the best known pharmaceutical brand. Women used to be told to get the men's 5% formulation because it works so much better. But now there is an equivalent 5% version for women. And some clinics, like I just mentioned, we use a pharmacy that can compound things for us. There are other doctors and clinics that will do the same, that can make these stronger formulations. Normally, you'll apply it at night and then wash it off in the morning. But again, patience is important. And usually it's going to be something that's used for baldness, for hair loss, rather than to enhance the speed of growth. And as with anything, a small risk of side effects. And I think another thing, actually, I should say with minoxidil, sometimes when people stop using it, their hair loss can even seem worse than it was beforehand.
Okay, that's a really good rundown of what's available over the counter in terms of lotions. But what about in clinic? What's available in clinic?
There's quite a few things. Some things I offer, others I don't. Low-level laser therapy, so this is light within the red light range, can trigger a reaction in the cells that helps to regenerate the hair. So improving blood supply, improving the health of the hair follicle cells, and also reducing the local effects of hormones on the follicle. So all of this helps to grow new hairs, as well as reversing the miniaturization of damaged hair. There's also a study that says blue light can help to induce low-level hair growth. And this is through increasing hair density and shaft diameter. And in the study, it was over 10 weeks of use. So again, something that's not going to happen overnight. And also some similar findings reported with, you might have seen the red light helmets that some people have. And if we're touching on light therapy at home devices, they're not going to be as strong or as effective as what we can do in a clinic, but there are some with good feedback. There's one particular one called the Theradome, which seems to be quite well reviewed. And again, it's important to note that there can be some mild side effects. So blue light, for example, can also slightly darken your hair or scalp because it can affect the pigment producing cells.
That's interesting.
And yeah, it's one of those things it's good to know about.
Yeah.
And if you're using an at-home device, always follow the manufacturer's instructions. Don't believe that you know better.
Always. Some people use PRP, I think.
So PRP is platelet-rich plasma. So where we're harnessing the power of your own platelets from your bloodstream. And as these are injected, they release growth factors that help to stimulate hair growth in the scalp. So that's definitely something that we utilize quite a lot. And again, moving on from that, the potential for stem cell-derived therapies. So using things like growth factors, exosomes. We particularly use a brand of exosomes called Derive to help regulate the hair follicle cycle and regenerate more hair growth. And so with the ones that we use, they're applied topically or can be microneedled in or delivered using an ultrasonic device.
Okay.
And one thing I'm really passionate about, but it isn't strictly a treatment, is something called trichotest. So it's an advanced DNA test. So you take a little cheek swab and send it off to the laboratory, and it's a full explanation of your genetic characteristics and how they relate to your hair loss. So it can really help you to have a deeper understanding of the causes and for us to personalize a treatment plan. And we'll often alongside that also recommend blood testing, because if you are depleting certain micronutrients, which are important for hair growth, then no matter what treatments we give you, they're less likely to work efficiently.
And with the Trico test as a DNA test, would that test for other, is that a more generic health test, or does it just pertain to hair?
This just pertains to hair.
Right, okay. All right, interesting. Okay. Mm,
it's a really, really good innovation.
Yeah.
And can really help to tailor also those topical lotions we talked about. So we will often prescribe based on the findings from that. So it can help us to know how sensitive someone might be to minoxidil, for example. That's very, very useful.
Yeah, definitely. Okay.
Another thing to touch on, we talked about hormone-related hair loss. And so HRT or bioidentical HRT can help to rebalance your hormones. And so if your hair loss is hormonally driven, that can be really helpful. And again, through the compounding pharmacy we use, some of our patients we prescribe with topical estrogen for the scalp. So again, that can be something that is really useful if we're trying to think about someone holistically. In terms of other things we use in clinic, we use a stem cell serum called Callosin Professional. And this comes from the cord lining of red deer. And it's extracted without harming any animals. So it's the cord after a baby deer has been born. Yeah. And again, this has a really powerful mix of proteins and growth factors and cytokines. And we've again had some incredible results in clinic, combining it particularly with microneedling so that we have these little channels that make the serum be better absorbed. So we get some really lovely results. We also have something called Kerovive, which is a spin-off of Hydrafacial, which many people have heard of. And this uses a patented technology to unclog the hair follicles and to boost circulation and also just remove any dead skin and product buildup, while also helping to hydrate and nourish the scalp. So we use that quite a lot. It's about looking at the scalp as an extension of your skin. We want to treat your scalp so that it supports healthy hair growth.
Yeah. Such an obvious thing when we think about it, because it is an extension of our skin. It doesn't just stop.
Exactly. And it's skin we often neglect. And I guess last but not least, it's definitely important to mention hair transplants.
Oh, yes,
they're not my area of expertise, but they've come an awfully long way. And techniques nowadays are so sophisticated. And it's not just a treatment for men. They can be done really effectively on many women as well.
You mentioned nutrition. So what about supplements?
So supplements can help to boost hair growth if they contain the right balance of nutrients that you happen to be deficient in, because of course we're all different and our needs are all different. Many people talk about biotin as a good supplement, but again, if you're not deficient in biotin, then no matter how much biotin you take, it's going to have relatively little effect on your hair, but it might make you quite constipated.
Right.
I think it's important to think about the common deficiencies: iron, zinc, magnesium, B12, and again, vitamin D. We won't blindly treat these. We do take blood tests to see whether any of these are deficient. And I think that's a really useful step before embarking on a hair treatment plan. But as a good rule, I think taking an iron supplement with vitamin C, which helps improve iron absorption, is a good step. But again, if you don't need it, it can make you constipated. And a good quality zinc supplement, I think, is also a no-brainer. The one that we use time and again in clinic is a product called Viviscal Professional. And there are non-professional versions, which you can also find on the high street. These have independently published clinical studies behind them, I think 11 at the last count I know about. So again, focusing on evidence-based research. And this has various things in it, like biotin, zinc, and vitamin C. But it also has something called Aminomar C, which is this proprietary complex, which has been shown independent of all of those other ingredients to boost hair growth. And we have certainly seen that in clinic. I know a lot of hairstylists are big fans of Philip Kingsley's PK4, which is a soya-based supplement. And it's something that I don't personally have any experience with. Professionals that I trust rave about this. And then there are a couple of other supplements I've seen come to market. So Nuco have got a hair growth supplement, and they have clinical studies that again seem to show increased thickness and less hair shedding. And there's another one called Kera Health, which uses patented ingredient, which is apparently this highly bioavailable source of keratin. And since 90% of our hair structure is keratin, that could potentially be useful. But again, it's one I don't have personal experience with. I think we have to remember that hair growth is complicated and sometimes challenging. So really thinking about yourself from the inside out is important. Supplements are not a replacement for a healthy, balanced diet. And those hair follicles, they're mini metabolic organs that use up an awful lot of energy. And touching on lifestyle again, do not smoke. It really has been shown in studies to be associated with premature balding, and focusing on stress management is so important.
Yeah. As if another reason not to smoke, another reason not to get stressed. I mean, we always, as you say, we come back to these same pillars and cornerstones of good health. Do hair growth shampoos work?
So they're not going to treat something like your androgenetic alopecias because they're not left on the scalp for long enough. But I do think volumizing shampoos can be quite beneficial for people who've got fine or thinning hair. So certain ingredients, like there are some thickening proteins which can help to add bulk to the strands. And we have to remember that actually shampooing is important. It's important to keep your scalp environment clean and in good condition and to minimize that product buildup. And a flaky scalp can in its own right contribute towards hair loss. So keeping that scalp healthy and clean, and also just sometimes looking at it. I know it's harder to do when we've got hair there, but inspecting your scalp and using, if you've got a flaky scalp, look for a shampoo that's designed to help treat that.
Yeah, that's a great tip. Or get someone else to look for you, someone that you trust.
Exactly.
How often should we wash our hair?
So there's no magic number, but it's been shown that cortisol and this DHT that we've talked about can speed up hair thinning. And both of these can be present in the sebum on your scalp. So that's our natural scalp oil. So I would say washing your hair and your scalp at least 3 times a week is sensible, but you also don't want to overwash. When we go to the hairdressers and we have that lovely wash at the back bar, complete with scalp massage, there is actually a reason for that because it can help to increase circulation. So even though it's not been talked about for its hair preserving qualities yet, it can certainly help to boost hair circulation and, of course, is brilliant for managing stress.
It's often the best part of getting my hair cut for me.
I know,
anyway.
I love it. It's just the moment they go, would you like a massage? As if I'm going to say no.
Yes, and don't talk to me and make it last about 10 minutes. There are so many treatment products out there as well. Should we just run through a few of them and any of your thoughts?
Yeah, there's loads. One that I do really rate is Monpure's. They have a whole brilliant range, actually, but their Follicle Boost Hair Density Serum. It's won loads of different awards and trichologists seem to love it as well. So it's a hair growth serum and one that I really do recommend and a joy to use. It's not just a product that feels like a treatment product. It's a beautiful product. And, you know, in terms of what to look out for in a hair growth serum, I'd recommend looking for peptides and amino acids and conditioning ingredients like HA, hyaluronic acid. You might also find some serums contain things like caffeine. There are a few studies that have suggested may be helpful for hair growth. And then you'll also find bond repair treatments that help to, say, repair the hair at a more deep level, penetrating the hair fibers more than your average conditioner will.
Can we talk about Olaplex? Because I had no idea until researching this podcast that they've been caught up in a bit of a controversy, I think it's fair to say. So for background, I mean, I lost about 70% of my hair last summer during chemo, and I managed to keep the 30% thanks to the Paxman scalp cooling devices. So I want to shout out to Paxman because I didn't lose it all. And for my self-esteem, that was important. I know for some people, it's a personal choice. So since then, trying to kind of encourage the rest of my hair growth, I've been using Olaplex, which if people don't know, it's received almost cult status, hasn't it, as a range?
Yeah, for sure.
But it's been all over the news and I had no idea. So can you recap some of this for us?
Olaplex really did take the beauty world by storm and it still does have a really loyal fan base. Celebrity endorsements, viral TikTok videos, one big report, Trends Report, voted it the hottest hair brand. And it also became Sephora's best-selling hair products. So by the time it was listed on the stock exchange, it was apparently valued at $14 billion, which is just enormous.
Yeah.
And all down to one single patented ingredient. But then it was faced with a string of lawsuits from people claiming hair loss, bald spots, blisters and scalp injuries. And Olaplex was forced to remove an ingredient called Lilial from its best-selling product, which is its number three hair perfector. And this was after a ban that was related to reports of infertility from that ingredient. So both Olaplex, the company, and hair care experts have since warned customers not to throw out all of their Olaplex products, saying that this study on this ingredient was conducted on animals and that no studies have been conducted to assess its effect on human reproductive function. But nevertheless, Olaplex has still removed this Lilial from its number three hair perfector and all of its other products. But as far as I'm aware, there are still lawsuits continuing. So I think it's a tricky time for them as a brand.
Thank you for giving us a recap on that. And people can follow up on that story if they want to. Let's end on a positive and let's give a shout out to some of our favourite hairdressers and hair care brands. I've always had a... I'll go first, if that's all right. I've had a soft spot for Aveda for so many years. Still love them, still love their products. I think they're wonderful. And whenever I'm in London, I do love going to the Gary Ingham Aveda Salon in Hampstead. I do also want to add that when I did use a wig, Lucy Kingswell at the Hair and Wig Clinic in Taunton in Somerset, where I am, was an absolute lifeline, and she's got customers all over the country, so I just want to mention her. But what about you? Do you have any favourites, either hairdressers, or you've mentioned a few products, like what else do you use?
Absolutely. My hairdresser is the amazing Jordan at Geely Green in London. So I've been going to him and no one else for years now. He's unusual in some ways in that he's amazing at both colour and styling, and I wouldn't go to anyone else. He takes such good care of me. And products, you know, I love them on Pure Products. I love as a range Pureology. They're free of your SLSs and things like that. And that's what I use for shampoo and conditioner. But the other range that I discovered a few years ago now that I am obsessed with is something called K18. They also have a shampoo and conditioner, which I don't use, but I use their original hair mask, which I guess is more along the lines of what Olaplex does, but I personally think it's better. And so many hair professionals seem to feel the same way, but it's reinfusing the hair shaft with protein. And what I can say is my hair is so much more manageable, so much healthier, so much softer, so much less tangly since I've been using that.
And I actually should also say, I don't use hairspray, but Elnett seems to continually, when I worked in TV, I don't think any makeup artists didn't have Elnett hairspray, for which they use for various things. So I'm going to just mention Elnett as well as hairspray.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts?
Just to reiterate that whatever you're doing, this is going to take time. And a lot of the time, you know, we're seeing ourselves in the mirror every single day. Take some photos before you start and then check back on those photos 3 to 6 months later, because it can be so hard to keep track of the results you're getting and achieving. And if your struggles with hair loss are affecting how you feel about yourself and your self-esteem, then don't be afraid to talk to a GP or a health professional, because really it does come down to an accurate diagnosis. In order to be able to treat things properly, you need to have the right diagnosis in place.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And as you've said at the top of this episode, share this if you're listening and you know somebody that you think might be going through it for whatever reason, share this episode, because we've packed a lot in here. Everything we've mentioned, of course, will be in the show notes, as we always say. But Sophie, thank you so much.
Thank you, Fee.
And that ends our podcast. If you want to explore more of what we talked about, simply head to the show notes. We've done all of the research and noting down of names, ideas, any studies we mentioned, so you don't have to go digging. To be ahead of the latest episode, press follow on Apple Podcasts. That's the little cross on the top right. Or simply hit follow on Spotify or whichever podcast app you use. Also, do follow Sophie on Instagram and TikTok. There's loads of great content and little explainers on there. Search for Dr. Sophie Schotter. Finally, if you're close to London or Kent, you can book a consultation with Sophie and find out more about who she is and the range of treatments and services she offers via drsophieshotter.com. And by the way, there's some great blog content on the website too. My name's Fiona Mattesini. On behalf of myself and Sophie, please do take a moment to rate and review the show. It all helps. And of course, thanks for listening.